Well, hello everybody, and welcome to yet another oneliner.com podcast, perhaps the least organised of all our podcasts so far, so you'll forgive us if it's a bit of a rush job. I am Craig, as always, coming to you from just outside Liverpool, in Glasgow, Scott Morris.
Guten Tag.
And in Falkirk, Drew Tavendale.
How do?
Let's get this ramshackle thingamabob on the road. Oh, which, actually, there you go, there's an unintentional segue if ever I heard one. Hey! Some of us around here quite like Cormac McCarthy's novels, and we pretty much all enjoyed director John Hillcoat's 2006 film The Proposition. So the proposition of John Hillcoat directing The Road, Cormac McCarthy's arguably most celebrated novel, seems like something to get quite excited about around these parts. Drew, why don't you tell us about The Road?
Yeah, as you mentioned, it's based on Cormac McCarthy's novel, which won the Pulitzer Prize, no less, which is something of a big deal. So he's got quite a lot to live up to there, John Hillcoat. After an unidentified apocalypse, the Earth is dying. All planet animal life has died out, and only humans remain. They've got to survive as best they can on any food they can scavenge from what were once homes and businesses, all the while trying to avoid the groups of humans that have decided to survive by eating other humans. Oh, those wacky cannibals. So in this landscape, we find a father and son, known simply as Man and Boy, played by Viggo Mortensen and Cody Smith-McPhee. They're on the road, the rather generic terms for their travels, as they head south towards the coast, and they hope a better chance of survival. It is, unsurprisingly, a bleak film, it being post-apocalyptic, but it's pleasingly free of zombies, which seem to have been done to death in the last decade or so. Like the characters' lives, the film is Spartan and bleak, devoid of colour, and one thing is you'd best get very, very fond of brown if you intend watching it. There's a very, very distinct colour palette in that everything's brown. But brownness aside, it's a powerful and moving exploration of parenthood and the need and desire to retain your humanity and your values in an increasingly inhuman world. When a few issues mar it, there's at least one too many flashback scenes involving Charlize Theron as the man's wife, and while it's partly due to the lack of seasons and partly because their life is so repetitive and monotonous, there's no strong sensation of time passing, which somewhat undermines the grind of the duo's existence, and it's something which, though I've not got around to reading it myself yet, it seems to work much better in print. However, the leads are both superb. Smith-McPhee is the innocent child, and Mortensen as the gruff, taciturn father who will do anything to protect his son are eminently watchable, quite captivating. It's not easy viewing, and it's certainly not in any way entertaining, at least not in a traditional sense. But it's a rewarding watch, so I would say status approved.
Well, that's what we'd like to hear. Scott, is that an opinion you would concur with?
Yes, I mean, you cannot possibly say it's an enjoyable film. It's just so relentlessly bleak. But it's certainly an incredibly well-crafted film. It's an incredibly well-acted film. It's an incredibly well-put-together film. It's a minor masterpiece in that respect. It's just so relentlessly and almost unbearably bleak, and it's such a hopeless film. It's remarkable in the sense that there's really no hope whatsoever in this whole film. The characters are going on this journey, they're heading south. There's never any reason given to expect that it will be any better there, and funnily enough, it isn't. And they're in a world where they're, by their own admission, everything's dead, there is no crops. Regardless of how it ends, these characters are going to die, and they are going to die soon because there is no food. There is the canned food that is left from other people, and then there is other humans, and then there is nothing. It's such a bleakly existential film that it's almost unbearable in places, and it's haunting it more than any film I've seen in a good long time. It's just so hopeless. Now, that may not be what you want in a film. if you want to escape from the grind of daily life, this isn't really a very good choice, but it is a very good film. How you sell it to people, I don't know, other than the fact that it is very good. And if you like being depressed to the point of suicide, perhaps, then knock yourself out. Again, it's hard to say I liked this film because it is so almost obnoxiously unbearably bleak, but it is a very good film. That may be a dichotomy, but well, you pay your money and takes your chances. It's only £8 to see it, you know, knock yourself out.
This may sound really weird, but I actually found it quite pleasing and refreshing that it was so unremittingly, unrelentingly bleak. That possibly says quite a lot about my personality, or perhaps just says more about films of late. But there isn't of any sort of grain of hope you can hold on to, which is quite nice just for the simple fact of being different.
Mm.
The thing is, I couldn't... It's a superb film. Well, almost superb, but as Scott said, you couldn't say to somebody, I think you should go and watch this, because they're likely to end up not liking you for it.
You know what I'm in the mood for? The most miserable film I've ever seen.
Yep.
Yeah, let's pop that on.
Yeah, it's like it's a very good film, but you couldn't justify telling anybody to go see it because you just feel bad about it.
certainly not on a first date, anyway.
Yes. Nevertheless, listeners, go and see it.
Forever think as bastards. I haven't seen the film yet, because having thoroughly enjoyed the book somewhere in the region of 2 years ago, I was advised by several people who have seen the film, don't see it, it'll kill the book for you. I'm not sure how it can kill the book, because the book was, it simply is perhaps the best book I've ever read in my entire Nelly Puff. I haven't read anything quite like it, but it is, by all accounts, unremittingly bleak, and I don't see how the film adaptation, if it's been done to anything like the degree I've been assured it has, can possibly ruin that, because it can't make me think, oh, that's a bit bleak.
Yeah, I think really, from what I've heard, Craig, that the only difference is that the book's sort of a notch above everything in the film.
Mm-hmm.
This film's sort of at 9 on the sort of bleak and miserable scale, and the film just notches that up to 10.
Yeah.
That's about the only difference. It's not quite as bleak as the film, because you don't have the unremitting grind of them constantly searching for food for several hundred pages.
Yes, exactly. Which is basically what it is. I'm told that there is a scene at the end of the film, which is the only one which is not in the book, but obviously I shan't be mentioning that. For obvious reasons. There you are, the road. Man, it's bleak. Up in the Air, George Clooney's latest film, directed by Jason Reitman, son of Ivan. Son of Ivan!
It does sound like a film in itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's been garnering a fair amount of praise at the Golden Globes and other such award ceremonies recently. Scott, why would that be?
Well, because it's quite good.
Excellent news.
Although, not that that's anything that would be associated with gathering awards nominations.
Thankfully, it's good in a more conventional sense that you can actually recommend to people. George Clooney playing Ryan Bingham, who works for a consultancy who basically hire him out to fire people. This seems a strange thing to base a company on, but it seems they've been working out quite well for them. Indeed, business is booming to the extent that they're now looking at, rather than having these people fly across the country to bits of America and racking up huge airfare bills, trying to do it over this wonders of internet telephony and firing people through a computer monitor. This seems to Ryan to be a bit of an unpersonal way of doing things, and so he takes on himself to show the person who came up with this fabulous plan, Natalie Keener, played by Anna Kendrick, the error of her ways by taking him on the road with him through various firing situations. Along the way, Ryan expounds his worldview. Basically, he is something of a complete loner. He packs his life into a carry-on suitcase, and this is how he has lived for years. He's formed very few personal attachments, and while he's not antisocial or an alien to society, he has no real firm ties, he has no family ties, he has no long-term girlfriends or anything like that. However, he does meet a lover in one of his hotel stays, and they form a relationship. However, it turns out that Ryan's perhaps not so isolated as he wants to make out, thus forms a bit of character development. It's a very well-acted film. It's quite light, it's quite breezy, that does deal with mankind's place in a society that seems intent on driving people apart rather than it does bring them together. And it's, for the most part, very amusing and very likeable. All the leads have very good performances. There's not really much to complain about in that regard. It's relatively amusing. There's some almost heartbreaking scenes of people being fired, including an excellent supporting role from J.K. Simmons, who, well, obviously is excellent. When is he ever not? Yeah, heartily enjoyed it and heartily recommend it to anyone.
Well, that's good to hear. Drew, was this a third excellent film from the younger Reitman for you?
Oh, yeah, and his best yet.
Excellent.
It's just got a superb ensemble cast and very, very compelling performance by George Clooney, who even gives a voiceover that probably enhances the film, sort of giving an idea of his opinion as opposed to almost every other voiceover being to the degradation of a film. I don't have a lot to add to what Scott said. It's just, it's very compelling, it's funny but genuinely touching, the people seem real. It's got rather interesting use of some interviews interspersed from people who had genuinely been fired, which just gives it a bit more heart perhaps. But it's not overused and it's just quite a nice touch. Possibly the only problem I had with the cast is Danny McBride, who doesn't really add much to his characters. There's not a great deal of point in being there. Not that he's bad, it's just that he's not playing to the strengths that Danny McBride normally has. other than that, it's excellent.
There you are then, up in the air. Check that shit out. Now, apparently what the world needs most at the moment is another vampire film, and whether or not that's an accurate assertion, Drew is going to inform us as we speak about Daybreakers.
I think what the world doesn't need is another vampire film that's not actually about vampires. Witness, for instance, the drivel that is Twilight, which is just a dreary, turgid teen romance that just happens to have vampires that's entirely irrelevant. This has your actual, typical, proper vampire, you know, being killed by stakes to the heart, that sort of thing. But in this, unusually, they're in control and they're the majority species. That's due to the fact in the not in any way at all distant future, a viral outbreak originating with magic bats means that almost all of the human population has become vampires. And
no!
Alas so. And those few humans who do remain uninfected are hunted down to provide food, you know, i.e. blood, for the vampires. Not all vampires are out to feast on humans, though. Edward Dalton, played by Ethan Hawke, is a scientist who forswears drinking human blood and works at a pharmaceutical company researching a synthetic blood substitute to remove the vampire's dependence on humans, who, as it happens, are dying out, meaning the pointy tooth folk's stomachs are getting distinctly rumbly. After a chance encounter, Edward becomes involved with a group of humans looking for a way to turn the big, nasty, bitey vampires back into humans, a process which he undergoes himself, and he must then stay out of the vampire's grasp long enough to develop a large-scale process. So much so MacGuffin, but fortunately it isn't a turgid teen drama, it's more of a action-y film with quite interesting take on vampires, with them, as I said, being the majority of the population. And one of the things I particularly liked about it was that the vampire society is quite unlike that seen in most other films. It's more or less the same as ours, so corporations, public transport, office work, just that all the working is done during night rather than the day. The vampires drive cars, they drink coffee. The only difference is that their cars have UV shields and they take blood in their cappuccino rather than milk. It's an entirely competent and enjoyable action film with added bitiness. There's no great fault to pick with it. It's not going to stay with anybody for a particular length of time, but it's certainly going to entertain you for 90 minutes. Although it possibly gets a bit daft towards the end when you realise that Edward's method of administering the cure he has discovered is almost insanely impractical. But that aside, it's an enjoyable enough watch. It'll certainly entertain anybody that goes to see it.
Entertainment, Scott. Was it entertaining for you?
Yes, it's a very likeable B-movie. There's not an awful lot more to it than a likeable B-movie, but that's sometimes enough. Definitely has more ideas in it than you'd see in almost anything that has a vampire in it, and it's difficult not to like it on that basis alone. The ending does sort of suffer a bit from trying desperately to open up a crowbar in a sequel that it's probably not going to get, and probably shouldn't get, on the basis of how daft it got towards the end. But it's an enjoyable action film. It's well handled in those terms. There's some excellent performances from even Willem Dafoe, who redeems himself somewhat from being an antichrist.
Yes, but he's going to have to do an awful lot more to really get that off of his CV.
Oh yeah, he's in debt for a long time.
Oh yes.
It's enjoyable and it's likable, and I just repeat as Drew says, it's good to have something that is not just vampires slinking around in skin-tight leather doing karate at people, which is now the standard vampire movie, and that is just no good whatsoever. This shows a bit more thought towards it and also has some very nice action sequences, and you can't say much fairer than that, can you?
No, perhaps you can't. Yeah, Daybreakers, vampires, action, fair play. Scott, tell us about Ninja Assassin. The man on the posters looks awfully angry.
He is angry. He's a ninja, but he's been betrayed, or something like that. I can't actually remember too much about the plot, or even if there was a plot. It's odd when you look at who's behind this. We've got J. Michael Straczynski writing a screenplay, apparently, although I normally associate that guy with some kind of plot, whereas this doesn't really have much of one.
Yeah, well, that's it's strange that I didn't know it was him until you said there, Scott, but that's strange because that's a man who managed to sustain a plot over four entire seasons of Babylon 5.
Whereas I think this must be one of his offcuts. James McTeague returns from, V for Vendetta, I think was the last time I saw him knocking about. It is easily the least of the films we'll be talking about here, but it has its own kind of enjoyable moments to it, because it's certainly not taking itself particularly seriously. K-pop star Rain plays Raizo, a ninja assassin trained to the peak of his ability, who eventually left his ninja assassin clan after they killed a girl he quite liked. It's not a particularly deep plot, so he's been on the run and basically trying to take revenge upon these assassins by protecting people who were targeted by that clan. Bear in mind, this is a film that has people listed as pretty ninja on it, so you're not going to get too much in the way of plot depth here. Essentially, it's hung around the fact that some members of Interpol are getting a little bit too close to the secretive ninja clans, thus engaging the wrath of some of these clans. They go after him, Rain tries to stop him, action ensues. If you're going to pick fault with it, nothing like enough action ensues. There's moments where it just kind of grinds to a halt as people sit in an office and give lots of exposition that doesn't really make any difference to the grand scheme of things, because you're not really watching a film called Ninja Assassin for a detailed plotline. You're watching it to see people get cut up in interesting ways. And there are points where it does manage to deliver quite spectacularly on people getting cut up in interesting ways. This film takes violence and goes all the way over the top into something quite ridiculous and quite funny. It's done with enough self-awareness and knowing nods that it's supposed to be over the top and quite funny, rather than just simply bad. However, it doesn't really deliver enough of it. The stuff that is there is quite spectacular, but it delivers some peaks, and there's a bit too many peaks and troughs going on the way throughout it for it to be thoroughly recommendable. However, it is the sort of film that is a tremendous antidote to, say, something like The Road, if you watch it directly after it. It provided just the right amount of sheer stupidity and brainless enjoyment for it to kind of perk us up a little bit, I would say. So, yeah, hardly a classic, hardly something I could recommend, apart from perhaps as a get some beers round one night and watch it in a DVD format with your mates. But yes, certainly not the worst film I'll see this year.
Well, the world needs films that you can invite your mates round to watch with a beer, Scott. Drew, did you get a chance to check out Ninja Assassin?
I did, again, as antidote after The Road, which possibly meant I enjoyed it more than I actually deserved, given that it had any colour in it at all and wasn't unrelentingly bleak.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, it was mostly a red colour.
Yeah, I suppose it's reasonably enjoyable. I think the problem is that it doesn't, as Scott said, it doesn't have enough of the ridiculously over-the-top violence, and the real problem there is, rather than building up to some really, really daft dispatch by sword, it starts off with that in the opening scene, and it never comes even close to living up to the fun or ridiculousness of the deaths that you see in the start. And also, there's apart from that scene at the start, there's a really quite entertaining fight at the end, but in between, there's not an awful lot that happens, and it's probably fairly self-aware for most of it. But it does come dangerously close to taking itself seriously in the middle during the investigative bit. But it's really dumb, but it's not terrible. And yeah, get some beers round, watch it, have a laugh. I just wish they'd had the silly stuff at the start either all the way through or build up to that, because it's let down after the opening scene.
Well, that's Ninja Assassin.
It certainly is.
So if you had to pick a favourite out of that bunch, guys, I suspect I know what you'll say, but Scott, what would it be?
That's tough to say. I would say that The Road is a better film, but certainly Up in the Air is more enjoyable, and you're not going to go far wrong with either of those two.
Drew?
I would say Up in the Air is actually a better film than The Road, although there's not a great deal in it, and I would suggest that certainly because it won't make you feel suicidal. But yeah, you couldn't go wrong with either of them because they're both superb films. So.
But you might want to kill yourself less after watching Up in the Air.
Almost certainly.
Unless George Clooney comes around, sacks you, and you throw yourself off a bridge.
I don't think The Road would really make you feel suicidal. It's more just stop you wanting to care about anything. You just slowly waste away rather than actively take your own life.
And on that upbeat note, we...
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for listening. I've been Craig Eastman, and Scott's been Scott.
Patty bye.
And Drew has, by all accounts, been Drew.
Fare thee well.
Keep it real, mofos. Oh, before we carry on, I invented sherbet pasta today.
And the verdict?
It's fucking terrible.